Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, welcome to another Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. The guest this week is Simon Munnery, comedy genius, wrestler. We're going to have all sorts of fun in this one. You're going to enjoy it. Might be worth watching the video for some of it. It gets a bit physical in places. But I am on tour coming up very soon, starting on the 2nd of February. I am going to be in Margate. On the 3rd of February, I'm in Fleet. On the 4th of February, I'm at the Nottingham Playhouse. 5th of February, I'm at the Chorley Little Theatre. 6th of February, Sutton Coldfield. That one's sold out. You can see all of my gigs at richardherring.com/gigs or richardherring.com/the_best/tour. Coming up are the Leicester Comedy Festival on the 8th of February. I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre the 16th to the 18th. Bury St Edmunds on the 19th. Just go and check out the page and you can see if I'm coming near to you. Some of them sold out, some of them are close to selling out. Those London dates are selling pretty well. We've added some more in June in London because it's selling so well, so that's good news. And we're also doing the final episode of As It Occurs to Me at the Leicester Square Theatre on the 12th of February. I think that'll be a lot of fun. So there's still a few tickets left. It's selling pretty well. So head to the leicestersquaretheatre.com website, and you can buy tickets to that or look at richherring.com/gigs for that as well. And you can see the link. Thanks for listening, and, all exciting news going on. We're recording, a taster tape for my radio, my Channel 4, hopefully sitcom, Everything Happens for No Reason. And, I'm writing a Radio 4 sitcom at the moment, which should be out in June. So there's a lot going on, and that's why my voice is slightly croaky, because all this work is killing me. But it's fun, and hopefully you're going to enjoy the byproducts. I'm looking forward to no longer having to do podcasts, and I can take my rightful place back on the television where I belong. Hope you enjoy this podcast. I'll never give up podcasting, even if I'm in Hollywood. All right, even if I'm dead, I'm going to carry on from the grave. Okay, let's go. Let's watch and listen. Just listen, because you're on the audio one, to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with Simon Munnery. Goodbye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is tired of London and tired of life, but neither of them will let him go. It's Richard Herring! Hello, welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out at the clothes shop where Ben, the producer, gets all of his gear. And there's a lot of young people in there, kind of surfer kids, and they call it Rehillisbus. So I don't know if that's going to catch on. So it's lovely to be back here. I talk about farts and poo a lot, but my daughter is learning to use a potty at the moment. She's quite young to be doing this. My wife's quite insistent she gets potty trained, and she's quite good at it. You know, we're doing quite well, but like sometimes she mistakes. She thinks she says she needs the potty, and she goes and she just does a big fart on the potty instead of a poo. And I kind of thought it was sort of interesting because that's, you know, we never quite lose that, do we? When you're starting out, you think, I don't know the difference between a fart and a poo, but we never, however long we live, we never quite are quite sure that we've definitely got the right one. It's not so bad when you think you're doing a poo and it's a fart. That's all right, isn't it? But many of us think, oh, I know, well, that's definitely a fart. Oh, no, I should have gone to the potty for that one. So she's never going to quite master it. And you think the longer you are alive, the more you would master that particular situation. But people who are 100 years old are probably worse than anyone at it. So it's never... We can do all... We've put a man on the moon, but we can't be sure whether we're doing a poo or a fart. That is... I am speaking for myself. I'm definitely speaking... Why would you shout out if that wasn't a big concern of yours? That is... People, I haven't just done a shit in my seat. If that strange smell around here is definitely not me. It's probably Richard Herring or a naughty dog, one of the two. So it's very good. We've got a weird, quite some empty spaces here in the front row, weirdly, today. There were some people here earlier. There's a man here. He's kindly bought a badge. You can buy these badges online. A gold badge. That's pretty... Slightly worried I picked on a stalker, to be honest. That is his... So I never thought I would meet an actual gold badger. What put you off buying the platinum badge? Was he thought, oh, I'll pay £5 or £10? No, I'm not an idiot. It's the badge. What's your name, sir?
John,
you seem slightly insane.
Yes.
Yeah, good. Have you ever been in a canoe, John?
Never.
No, okay. Have you ever tried sushi?
Never.
Wow. Have you ever flown a kite?
No.
No, wow, you'd be a terrible guest on this show. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
No.
What? No. I thought I'd definitely get a yes there, didn't I? If I'd asked Andy. Yeah. No. I didn't ask you though, Andy, and now I've got that horrible image in my head. So I'm hoping my guest is ready. He was just he's been having a cigarette and a wee. My next guest this week is the S&M, another S&M. Ooh. He is probably best known for his appearance. Is he back there, George? No. Yes, he is. He's probably best known for his appearance in The Dumb Show, the 1992 Edinburgh show. That's why we're all here. Please welcome Simon Munnery. He's somewhere here. Ah, he's on this side. He subverted all my expectations. That's your mic there. That's... And pick that up and speak into it in a traditional... Simon Munnery, how are you doing?
Not bad.
Good. So do you remember the Dumb Show?
I remember the Dumb Show, yeah.
Yeah.
You were in it.
I was in it, and...
I remember there were two groupings.
There were.
Yeah.
It was me and everyone else. Which group was I in?
No, there were two groupings.
There was two groupings. There was you...
Go through the cast list.
There was you, there was me, there was Stuart Lee... There was Steve Coogan and best top of the punch.
Patrick top of the Marber. Punch.
Top of the bunch.
Patrick. You're like Shakespeare, aren't you?
I am top of the punch.
He just invented top of the punch.
Top of the punch. Patrick Marber was in it.
I'm not going to use that, but is
Patrick Marber. So it was.
As I remember it, it was Marber and Coogan.
Yeah.
And Lee and Herring.
Yeah.
And me in the middle.
Right.
That's as I remember. There was two like double act kind of things. And
are you the go-between?
just indifferent to all of you.
Yeah, it was. You did basically an early version of the League Against Tedium.
That's exactly what I did.
Yeah.
And it didn't go very well. Sketches. I mean, the whole show was a disaster.
Well, it was interesting because we're in Pleasance 2, is it called that one? I can't remember what it's called, but the barn
is
one.
Anyone interested in this?
Yeah, they are. But nobody came to see it. When you think about who was in that cast, like we would get 10 or 15 people. But I saw Bill Bailey and Sean Locke. I think that year or the year before, do a show called Rock or something like that. Do you remember when you see that show?
Yeah.
Two people in there. It's kind of going back and looking at that and thinking, all the people who would like to have seen those things. It was a weird mistake, The Dumb Show, probably.
I remember the arguments and the main thing I remember is when Steve Hoon got the cocaine problem.
He had a cocaine problem.
There was one morning because the show was a disaster. I mean, just it was two gangs. There was Lee and Herring and Marvin Coogan, and there's me in the middle. Like, oh, I don't know. Anyway, but we always meet up for breakfast at a cafe in whatever part of Edinburgh that was,
yeah.
Like for porridge. And sometimes we'd all come. We knew the show wasn't working, and we needed to do something about it. But no one knew what. Anyway, on this particular morning, I remember it was me, Marva sitting there, and Coogan there. And Coogan suddenly goes, face down in the porridge. Face down in the porridge. And I laughed my ass off. As did Marva. We both did. We said, oh, Steve, you're such a funny guy. And he goes, no, I'm having a heart attack. Get me to hospital. Get me to hospital. And we went, oh. So we went up to the counselor, can you bring an ambulance? And he went, no, quicker, quicker. And it was raining. And I turned my Ford Cortina, Cortina Crusader, the last ones they made. Yeah. I'd driven it 100 yards from where we lived, where we were staying, to the cafe. So it was outside. Anyway, and Coogan knew that. I think we're staying in the same flat. Anyway, he goes, so, and Patrick Marber's written this up several times in his autobiography. Just he's written it up several times. And he completely cuts me out of the story, which I was slightly annoying. What happened was, we just panicked, like, he's having a heart attack. We got Coogan in the back of the car, and he was going, like, you know, not time enough for an ambulance, get me to hospital, get me to hospital. And so he's in the back of the car, Marva's in the passenger seat, I'm driving, Ford Cortina Crusader, you know, all the trimmings. You know, velour, I mean, it's a beautiful car, I just wish I'd never sold it, but, you know, I did get done for speeding 120 on the M40. Happy days. Turn up. Oh. Anyway, he goes, oh, take us. Go to the hospital. Go to the hospital. So we're going down towards the hospital, and we come towards a junction where it's a one-way street. Just go through it. Just go. So I did. I drove the wrong way down a one-way street to get Steve Coogan to hospital. And then he doesn't remember it. Anyway. Steve Coogan ends up in hospital, right, blah, blah, blah. We know it's something to do with cocaine. That's all we know, it's something to do with cocaine. But we'll go back. We'll meet up and, what's going to happen? What's going to happen now? Is he going to come and do the show? Is he going to come and do the show? Later on, I found out that Jay Toddy, I can't remember his name, but the my manager, yours. Anyway, had gone into hospital. This is what I understand. Anyway, he got into hospital and threatened Steve Coogan. Said, "If you don't do the dumb show, this was the worst show. If you don't do it tonight, I will reveal to the press why you're in hospital." And it turns out what had happened was a very simple thing. If you ever take cocaine, the thing is it lowers your blood sugar level. And if you go to eat, then that automatically lowers your blood sugar level. If your blood sugar level gets too low, you go into some sort of fit thing. And he got into that. And basically, all they did was put him in a dark room and left him for a bit. And he was fine. Anyway, there was this most beautiful moment, absolutely beautiful moment. Okay, so I came back to the flat.
Yeah.
It was me and Marva, and by this time, it was very stressful taking a bloke down. You think he's dying, and you think he's dying. He thinks he's dying, that's why you think he's dying, that's why you drive him down the wrong way road. Right, take him down to the hospital, put him in, and he's going, anyway, we come back, and we're trying to tell you and Stuart, but we're laughing. Marva's in, no, he's not. Yeah, you know, he's in hospital. Something. He's had a heart attack, I don't know. Anyway, so he comes back, And we think, oh. But what happened in the meantime was our mutual agent at that time had gone into hospital and threatened Steve Coogan that if he didn't do this show, it would be revealed to the press why he'd been in hospital. Anyway, he arrives at Pleasance Courtyard and he gets out of the cab and he's walking across the road. Well, you know, we don't know. You know, about half an hour before the show starts, we don't know. You know, oh, Steve, we're back, Ray. I went and hugged him. I went, have you got any left? and he did. It was in his top pocket. And I took it off him and I went to my favourite toilet in the Pleasance, which is the upstairs, if you're interested.
Yeah.
It's in the upstairs disabled toilet. There's no way for the disabled to get upstairs. It's a really quiet toilet. Really. Nothing. I'm out there and I snorted a lot. Because my view is when someone falls off a horse, it's your duty to get on that horse. And finish the fucker off. But ever since then, I've read it about three times. You know, then Patrick Mamba drove me to the hospital. It was my fucking car. I drove. I risked my fucking life and Patrick Marvel's, you know. Oh, it's like killing Shakespeare or something. No, it's not. It's like killing someone a lot worse.
I think he's probably just embarrassed that he was in that. He was into his sports cars, wasn't he? He drove around in the sports car that Edinburgh.
Who did?
Coogan had a sports car.
Did he, in Edinburgh?
He drove around, he said, the famous quote was him saying, it was an expensive sports car, he ran up to Edinburgh.
An expensive
said,
sports car.
Well, and he said, it pays for itself in pussy, that was the charming thing he said. This is the early 90s, Steve.
It was
Coogan's.
Probably a character.
Maybe.
Look, we've all had sex, yeah?
We have. My memory is it was a Monday night and there was about 10 people in as well, so it was kind of crazy.
Unusual sex.
He was dragged from hospital to come to this gig that nobody was at anyway. So it was kind of... I think we could have let that night... We could have given him a night off as he was in hospital. Never mind. It was a fun time. We're near to the end. Peter Kessler, the producer, came to see it and wanted to put it on TV.
Peter
Kessler, do you remember him? And
no.
And then Patrick Marb suddenly really loved the show again. He hated it. And then he was like, oh, no, we should really work hard. But I'm friends with Patrick now, so I'm not going to slag him off. But let's talk about you. He got quite upset that we always joked about him, so I just want to say I'm only joking about him. He's a nice, sensitive man, Patrick Marb.
Yeah. Badger.
Badger.
I'm a badger. That's my impression of Patrick Marvel.
We're helping. You used to design video games when you were a teenager.
That's one way of putting it.
Yes. There's a quite a bit on your Wikipedia page about it. You did Asteroids.
Nothing to do with me.
You did Asteroids for Commodore International VIC 20. Is that what it's called? VLC?
VIC 20.
VIC. I didn't have a Commodore. Jeff Minter described that as a pile of wank. And Jeff Minter, I looked up, is quite a big name in...
He's a big name. It's what got Jeff Minter into making computer games.
Right.
Was seeing one of my games... And thinking that is a pile of wank, and that's what got him into it.
Wow.
So I take the credit. And I think Jeff Minter should, you know, send me something.
He should. He should give me a cut.
One of his brilliant programs that he's written.
You did ZX.
I got fed up with it.
Did you?
Yeah. I was fluent. I was in ZATA and 6502 machine language. At the age of 14. Yeah. And they say Latin's a dead language. But I got to that, and I just got really bored with it. It's like, oh, the fucking machine. So what the fuck am I doing? All this time on a screen. Of course, now it's normal, but at the time, what am I doing? Is this going to be my life? Anyway.
Well, it was since I remember, like, I had BBC Electron, Acorn Electron.
Of course you do.
And, but you could program in your own games if you got
could
a book.
Could you?
If you got a book.
If you got a book.
If you got a book, you could copy it out.
Copy it out, yeah.
If you got one. If you got one comma wrong, then it didn't work.
No, it didn't work. If you,
and that was
when you typed out, you made a mistake.
It was like
didn't work.
4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours.
Yeah, typing out, it
and
didn't
you
work.
Just did, you, but you were too.
You had to change it.
That was copying.
But
you, had to make
you didn't
it
know
up.
Where the mistake was, did
no.
you? Had to go all the way back through. You didn't know. No.
Bad, didn't it?
Got to work it out. That's what programming is. I did that. I gave it up. It's a pile of shit.
I like Scramble, though. You did Scramble for the Commodore as well.
I did.
I love Scramble.
The Commodore VIC-20, yeah.
Yeah,
Commodore. I did. I used to be employed by a company in Liverpool called Bug Bite, and they you know, paid my train ticket up. I was 16. I was earning money. I went skiing. and from working class family, but my I was in well, independently wealthy on my own account from my computer games, and I went that's when I took up skiing because it was a school trip, school ski trip, and I'll go for that anyway. But I got invited up to Liverpool and to meet them, you know, 16, you know, you want a job, like. It was boom time for computer games, but you know, I went up to Liverpool and then I thought, oh fuck no, no. I mean, it was really run down at that time, Liverpool, and also I thought, you know, don't just go off, don't, you know, get educated, just generally educated, learn something, learn stuff, like go, you know. If I stayed on at school, I'd get A-levels, hopefully. I'm the first person in my family to have been to university, and possibly the last. When I went to university, it was a gift bestowed upon you by a magnanimous state. It was like, oh, you worked hard at school. Maybe you'd like to go to university. We'll pay the fees. And a grant, if you're poor. But like, you know they got rid of that very, very recently, like in August. There used to, there still was. I know we've only got fees for that for a long time. I object to that. But they recently got rid of the maintenance grant, as in there was. It still existed, which I had. That still existed. The maintenance grant there is if you're from a poorer family, we'll pay you some money just to eat while you're studying. I mean, it's hard to understand now, but that was at a time when education was kind of free. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's all in the fucking past. Anyway, that happened, and they got rid of that. Sorry.
No, it's interesting. So you went into comedy. Well, you started doing comedy. Had you done comedy before university? You went to university, and you met someone I've been at school with called Steve Cheek. Who you did a you did a double act with called God and Jesus,
the most offensive name we could think of at the time. We did a double act called God and Jesus. I was down there, the old Bristol. Yeah. Do you know what I love about Bristol?
Everything. It's good.
Well, everything, of course, is built on seven hills, like Sheffield, and Rome. what I love about Bristol is the way the place names within Bristol reflect the places.
Right.
Totterdown. The houses seem to totter down the hill. Clifton. It's on a cliff. Redland. Full of communists. Hawfield. I was disappointed.
Hey,
what a pleasant evening I spent testing my hypothesis.
Your Bristol material works in London. It's amazing. Look at that.
It's universal. But anyway, I was down there.
Yeah.
Right? Old Steve Cheek, he's an academic. He's Bristol University. He tells me stuff about academe. Little thing. There's a show what I have done, but what they've done, they've got rid of architecture A level. Not architecture,
archaeology.
They've got rid of it's like a little bit of topiary, to the communal brain. Ooh. Archaeology A-level. Don't need that anymore. Isn't it one of the pillars that history rests upon? It's a bit like saying, ooh, we'll keep physics, but we'll get rid of maths. It's fucking nuts. Anyway, they did that. But it means that there won't be, you know, 15, 16-year-olds, I'm interested in archaeology. Well, those archaeology teachers will no longer be able to pass on their love of archaeology and their interest in archaeology to future archaeologists. And if it, what you're doing is trying to kill archaeologists. Eventually, it'll come to it, it's like a movie. The last archaeologist. With his or her few books. And he'll die, won't he? The last archaeologist. That's it. It's over. It's not funded anymore. It's finished. That branch of knowledge ended. And he'll die. The last archaeologist. He'll die. And they'll bury him. No one will dig him up.
It is bad. I'm a big fan of archaeology, and that is a terrible thing, but...
Are you a big fan of archaeology?
I am. I love archaeology. I did archaeological digs when
you surprised me.
When I was 18.
With your demeanor.
When you were writing video games, I was digging up bits of pot in
quite... Bits of pot?
Yeah. Well, bits of pot, yeah. Like the Steve Cooper.
That's not specifically archaeology, is it? That's a diction.
It's a start. I went on some digs. It was a fun time. And you went to Edinburgh, you did Edinburgh first, then you've done your 30th anniversary of what's happening.
I'm just looking at your notes.
That's my notes of your life. This is your life. This is your life book. That's you, fuck mate. That's you. That's all you are. You did.
Do your worst.
I know all about you anyway. I just wrote some stuff down to be sure.
Not as much as I knew about you.
It was your 30th anniversary of your first Edinburgh this year.
Mine is
next year. You were there a year earlier with God and Jesus.
I win.
You do win. Have you done every year since then, or have you
missed one?
Just missed one out of the third. So you've done 30 Edinburghs then.
I've done 30 Edinburghs, but I missed one. I've done 31 Edinburghs, but I missed one.
Yeah. So, and you did a big celebratory...
It wasn't my idea. It was my agency said, you should do something. I went, yeah. He said, well, a gala. Anyway, so it was a benefit for Waverley Care Trust.
You know them? Cool. Yeah.
And one of my favourite memories of 30 years, I'd finished my show at the Stand, and for the last 15 years, I've been privileged to do... I've been performing for the last 15 years, at 3:30, roughly... Sometimes it varies. Sometimes it's 3:20, sometimes it's 3:40. But basically, 3:30, for the last 15 years, at the same place at the same time, for a month, during the Edinburgh Festival, at the Stand, best comedy club in the world. Anyway, I'd finished my show, and I was over the road at the Lord Bodo, having my customary pint of cider, catching the last rays of sun, about, you know, 4:00 or 5:00. And Scott Agnew comes up the road. He goes, Simon, there's a benefit for Waverley Care Trust down at the Newtown Bar, and an actress dropped out. Could you come and fill in? I went, of course I can. The only thing I resented slightly was having to go downhill. That is one of my rules for surviving Edinburgh: maintain your height wherever possible. It's a hilly city. Anyway, I went down there, right, Newtown Bar. It was absolutely jammed. A lot of blokes with beards. It was all blokes. Gay, you know. Bears, they're called, anyway, that specific sort. But jammed, and they've been drinking since noon, and we're like 5:30. Drunk, standing up, and drinking all day, and jammed together, and standing up. A recipe for a low attention span. I would say, you people are privileged. I thought this was going to be shit. Anyway, I went on, and it was the opposite. It was amazing. The most amazing, beautiful audience. Subtle of ear and warm... I mean, not as good as you. Subtle of ear, warm of laugh. Anyway. And we got to the end, and I thought, well, it's a benefit for Waverley Care Trust. I should probably end with doing my Waverley Care Trust joke. So I did. I said, anyway, this is a benefit for Waverley Care Trust. Give as much as you can to Waverley Care Trust. It's a very good cause. They raise money for people living in Scotland with AIDS, and it's bad enough having AIDS. Presumably, they'll spend the money on antiretrovirals and plane tickets. And they laughed, and then perfectly, as one, in unison, they booed me off. And that is a perfect gig.
So, I mean, we'll take a quick... You've done some amazing avant-garde stuff, not just the dumb show, which was the highlight. But
just because you were in it.
It was mainly because I was in it. It was, even for me, it was a lot.
Were we all staying in the same flat?
I think we did stay in the same flat. I can't remember much about it. I was
definitely remember coming back with Marba and trying to explain to you and Stu, while laughing, that Kuga was in hospital.
It rings about. I think we definitely were in the same flat. I've wiped
a lot. You didn't believe that we were serious, but we couldn't.
You were laughing, so that seemed to be an inappropriate response to the death of Steve Coogan, the loss of Alan Partridge, all the things that we wouldn't have had. But you started on the stand. I'm interested in the stand-up scene of the 1980s, which again you were in a little bit before we. Well, we were there right at the tail end of it.
Who's we?
Well, me and Stu kind of arrived in '89, and you've been doing it a little bit before, hadn't you? Before,
no, I don't know. Not much. Yeah,
but you were in with all Malcolm Hardy quite early on, and doing the. Did you do the Tunnel Club, which has just burnt down?
Is it?
Yeah, there was a big fire in the where the Tunnel Club
again. Yes, I did know Malcolm Hardy, and I did perform at the Tunnel Club.
Yeah,
I used to do open spots. So, I mean, Tunnel Club was. I'll talk about that for a moment.
Well, let's do that. That's why I asked. But you know, we don't have to.
He just teed me up from a minute ago. Didn't he?
It's fine.
He was at the Tunnel Club. I was, and it wasn't like it was now, like it is now. Like the Tunnel Club was something different. Tunnel Club, right? Just its location. Okay, if you're coming through the Blackwall Tunnel, if you happen to know the Blackwall Tunnel. You come through it, and then just like immediately go left. There's a sort of building there. It's a building, not sort of. It's actually a building. It's a genuine building. It's a pub that used to be called the Mitre, but at the time I don't know what it was called. But anyway, the Tunnel Club was. So it's basically you come out of the Blackwall Tunnel, and the stench of whatever they were. It was baby food, I believe. Anyway, so it's industrial wasteland, absolute wasteland. And the Tunnel Club was a Sunday night thing. The Malcolm Hardy used to run. And I remember being in the toilets there, and one bloke, I'm standing there, I'm still there, you know, like 19 or something. Anyway, two were going, yeah, it's been a good night, isn't it? Yeah. Malcolm gets his bollocks out, it's going to be a great night. And he did. He used to get his bollocks out. That's what he did. I remember another time. It was rough. Like, they'd heckle all the acts off within about 10, 15 minutes. And in any other club, that's a bad night. You know, even though the Tunnel, that was a victory. You could not come down there with your act and perform it without interacting with the audience. Jim Taffray used to think about he walked on with his double bass and someone shouted midget with a violin. It's the wit of the crowd. There was one night I was there, and this bloke was leaning on this door like this, and it was a fire door, and it just sort of gave way, and he just went a sort of black hole appeared, he'd gone. And he sort of crawled back out of the mud or whatever that was out there. And Mal said, 15 quid, do it next week. Boy, fuck it. That was his philosophy. He meant it. And, he's one of the people I'm privileged to have known in my life.
Were you doing Alan Parker at that point, or were you doing...
The only video that exists, I believe, of the Tunnel Club is me tying on my ass as Alan Parker. Not introduced as Alan Parker, introduced as Simon Reeve, which that's what threw me at the beginning. Now Simon Reeve went, oh, fuck, I'm a character.
So Alan Parker was your... Urban Warrior was your first kind of...
No, first thing I did was God Jesus, then security guard, then Alan Parker.
So it was.
You've always been Richard Herring, haven't you?
I did do characters to begin with, and I would.
Did
just,
you?
Yeah, I did a character called Cecil Massey, which was like an old Somerset guy.
Go on.
Racist guy.
Racist.
Well, it was sort of like that. It was that. I can't remember enough. I can remember any of it.
Oh.
I did it at university. It was like he was just saying the wrong things. All so right. You were laughing at his. It was an ironic. It was, you know, he called. I can't remember any of it. It was a topical. It was something. Did something about Ayatollah Khomeini. We can get you more booze. I'm trying to think of any of the jokes.
How many tollers have you hominies?
Ayatollah Khomeini. I can't remember any of it now.
But it was a racist character.
It wasn't racist, but he was an old man.
You said it was racist.
He was an old man who said politically incorrect things, and you laughed at
him. What difference is there between that character and you now?
I am more racist than he was.
Right. Well, fair enough.
Because I was very uncomfortable doing stand up.
I know.
I didn't really like it.
Sometimes you go well, sometimes it wouldn't.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the time it was either or, but I didn't really like it, and so I stopped doing it. Whereas you carried on doing it, and then I came back to it in sort of 2004. But yeah, so I hated that time when I was doing the early 90s, it would be for me.
I only vaguely remember it, but I remember this, you get angry and like, fuck you, you're not fucking finding me funny, I'm fucking off.
There was one gig you came to, I think. That wasn't the act, I think that was just a bad. I wish it had been.
It worked for Jerry Sadovitz.
Well, I love Jerry, as I know you do. I'm hoping to get Jerry Sadovitz on here. I'm trying to get him on this at some
you
point.
You never will.
I know, well, I thought that, but it seems to be more positive than I anticipated.
What did he do? I'd be good.
Possibly. But his Ben's shirt. That's a nice shirt, isn't it? He's a good producer.
I
think you came to it. We've known each other for a long time because you were friends with my friend from school, and then I'd meet you. We'd come back from university and we'd drink in cheddar pubs. And then a lot of my cheddar friends were in London. They came to, and I think you might have come to that gig. There was a gig I did where a guy was sitting right by. It was on a slightly raised stage, and there was a guy sitting like there. So I'd be on just up there, and his head was right by my foot, and he kept on saying stuff. So I kind of went to sort of gently kick him in the head to stop. And all my friends go, gently. Do you remember that gig where you kicked that block in the head? And so I kicked him a bit harder than I meant to. So I kicked a heckler in the head. So I would get angry when it wasn't going well, I think is probably true. I wasn't in control of my temper. But like you said, like sometimes it would be great, but not. I didn't know what I wanted to do with it. Whereas you always knew what you wanted to do, and you. But you.
What? How do you know?
I think you always stuck with whatever. You always stuck with. You know, there was your characters like would sometimes go great and sometimes not go great, but you always believed that they were, and correctly, that they were great. So you'd always carry on with it. Whereas I lost my bottle with what I was doing, and it wasn't as good.
I mean, there's a thing about losing your temper. One of the best ones I ever saw like that was not losing your temper, but like kicking someone off the stage was at Leighton Live in Edinburgh, the old Gilbert Balloon. Ross Noble was singing "It's the End of the World as We Know It," and I feel funny. He was singing that with the whole band, and but I knew him. I was in the crowd, and he's not a friend, but I kind of knew him. And he was going on, and Ross Noble just put his head on the bloke's head and just pushed him back. The end of the world. it wasn't violent, it wasn't a kick or anything. It was,
no.
You know, just, no, get off the stage. Have I ever told you the bravest thing I've ever seen anyone do on stage?
Go on, we're going to tell me.
Have I ever told you that, though?
I don't think you have, but let's tell me, and then
stop
I'll tell
me
you.
Stop me as soon as you recognise this well-worn anecdote. Right, late in life. Back in the day, down the Guild Balloon, oh, it was rough, like a bear pit, like the opposite of this. And I was backstage, and Mark Lamar, who was the sharpest at dealing with hecklers of anyone I know, just bang, bang, he'll just deal with it. Like you shout something at him, shout something at me.
Bang.
What?
Bed. Yeah, you can't cope with that.
I can't. The point is, I'm not Mark Lamar. he would have gone, bed? What the fuck? You talking about bed? Anyway. something like that. He'd have done something. He was just like brilliant at it. Like, he was the sharpest. He was like, right. I hadn't seen him for maybe, you know, I knew him, but you know, I was a friend, you know, he's good at fighting. But he hadn't seen him for a while. He was backstage at Late and Live, Gilbert Blue, the old one. And I went, hey, what are you doing? He said, I'm a compere. I went, what? And he got glasses on, and he started wearing glasses. And he was, you know, the host of The Word, which is a TV show. So he was famous, like none of us were. He was just massively famous. And he was gonna compare Late in Life wearing glasses for the first time whilst being famous. Now, think about the atmosphere of Late in Life. It wasn't like, ooh, ooh, you're famous. Ooh, ooh. It was more like, you're famous. We're going to kill you. we are the rabble. It was 2 a.m. You know, it was a, and there was a really anti-English thing as well. It was kind of, anyway. So, hey, Mark, good. All right, good luck. And I'm sitting at the side of the stage, and I'm watching it. Mark goes on, and he's just been heckled from all sides. He goes, can I deal with one at a time? Putting you on hold. He's just dealing with them. Well, go on. Someone goes, you specky cunt. He goes, oh, I've been waiting for that. I cannot remember what he said, but he just dealt with it. He was just like a gunfighter, just standing there going, and someone at the back goes, I'm going to kick your fucking head in. And Mark goes, all right. And he puts his glasses on the speaker. He says, come on then. And this bloke comes in the back. Now, if you're here, you can't see at the back. And this is what I regard as the most physically brave thing I've seen anyone do on stage ever. Is accept a fight from someone you can't see. You understand? Right? So this bloke is, not only is he coming back, the whole crowd is volatile, but this bloke is coming from the back of the crowd with the whole crowd going, fight, 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 fight. And he's putting his glasses aside. This bloke gets up, he's about the same size as Mark, a bit drunk, and the bloke tries to grab the mic. He goes, give us the mic. He tries to grab it. He goes, you can have a fight, but you can't have the mic. And you've got to start it. I'm not starting a fight in front of 200 people. And he pushes him behind him and goes like this and starts taking the piss out of him. With the bloke behind him who has come up with the express intention of being there. I haven't got that guts. I very few as I have. And, but the bloke, you could see him, he's just like... Like the lights. I can't bring myself in. And you know, what he did was he stage dived off the stage. He smashed loads of glasses and a table, and the bouncers chucked him out, and it was over. That happened.
Yeah, that's why I didn't really like stand up very much. So that happened all the time. I love the story of how you met your wife, which is almost a similar story.
I met my wife in Melbourne. I said, what are you doing here? That's actually one of Malcolm Hardy's jokes, and it was funnier when he did it. I met my wife in Melbourne. I said, what are you doing here? Well, let's try again.
They don't like jokes. They don't like jokes.
Really?
They don't like jokes. Proper joke. That's a proper joke.
You know.
They're too clever to understand a proper joke.
I met my wife in Melbourne. I said, "What are you doing here?" Yeah. You got it.
Yeah.
Tell the others. I did.
But you did meet your wife.
Yeah. Right. And as a friend of Malcolm's, it felt like a prophecy. I said, what are you doing here? And she was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar. That is true. She was. That wasn't our first conversation. First conversation I had with my wife. Well, she wasn't wife at the time. We didn't get married, didn't talk. I was doing a gig at Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and she heckled me, and I married her as a form of put down. Hasn't worked, she's proliferated.
Did she shout, "Don't die"?
Was that, that, that heckle? You want to hear the actual gig?
Yeah.
His actual gig went. Most bizarre gig, as in, I'd done my show, I was doing a show, Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Alan Parker and Moria, worked really well, blah, 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 done that. It was a late night fringe club show, about 1 a.m. or something like that. And I don't know if grass is legal in Melbourne, but it is in Adelaide, so it's kind of legal in Melbourne. And I had a couple of joints. It was a really late night. And a couple of drinks, a couple of joints. I remember showboating in the dressing room a bit. A couple of days ago, going, "How long have you been doing it?" "Oh, 5 years. 15. Just being really overconfident, you know, probably before fall. And Piston Stone went out. And, I did one joke, which was from Alan Parker. I was in the Alan Parker costume. I did one joke from the Alan Parker character set, which I will do for you very, very soon. If you're good. And then I said, "Right, Melbourne, got any issues?" Right. I wanted to improvise. I was asking them to shout things out, and I was going to improvise. That's the mood I was in. I wanted to improvise. Anyway, I can't be bothered. You'll have heard it anyway. Brothers, look at the state of this country. Young women sitting in their bedrooms, sticking their fingers down the backs of their throats, making themselves sick because those young women don't think they're attractive enough. Same time, young men sitting in their bedrooms, wanking themselves to death for the very much the same reason. If only everyone could get together and unite. She could stick his dick down her throat, kill two birds with one stone. Radical problems, radical solutions. Yeah. Okay. Joke went all right. Bang. When you come on stage, you got to like have something, you know, or not. You don't have to. You know, you have to start well or not. You don't have to. It's all right. I remember Alan Davies, right, years ago, seeing him just create space for himself. Alan Davies, you know, heard of him? You know, the tramp ear biter. I broke his leg. I did. Ask him, playing football. It was a fair challenge. We used to play, you know, jumpers, Tottenham. Anyway, not for Tottenham. They've got better since. Marginally. But he was playing Parkinson. But, you know, it was a 50-50 challenge. And he came off worse. He's a competitive football. He's a competitive bloke, right? A competitive football player. And, you know, as am I. You know, I'm playing someone who's competitive. I'm more competitive than if I'm playing someone who's less competitive. Basically. Probably why I'm not a professional footballer. To me, it varies. Like if you're not very good and you're a child or something, I'm not going to kick your face in. But Alan Davies is not like that. It's a bit cruel, isn't it? No. But it was 50-50. He broke his leg. No, I broke his leg, but he deserved it. I'm nothing against Alan Davies, except he's an Arsenal fan. Anyway, what was I talking about?
It's taking your wife. We're on stage in Melbourne.
I met my wife.
Yeah.
I'm on stage in Melbourne, you know, as I am now, in a way. But, it was a weird gig, right? So I started doing Alan Parker, his character, had done him a show, sold out show, gone well. And I did one joke, which was the one that I just did. I went, "Right, Melbourne, got any issues?" And this bloke at the back shouts out, "Repetitious comedians." And I went, "Oh, So just suddenly, no more character, none of that. This is my London skin came through. I just like, what the fuck? He, just angry. And, yeah, your London skin. Anyway. And it went on, and I tried to carry on doing the character, but it didn't work. I wasn't acting it very well, probably. And it wasn't working. There was no laughs coming from the jokes. Basically, I went, and the whole crowd went, and then I couldn't get them back. Like, I just, like, and we were in this thing, and I said, I'll do another act that would be in a different costume that I'm still working on. I'll try that. So I did a bit of that, and part of that was the Act of Supreme Supremacy. It was about the Church of England and Catholicism. Anyway, part of it was about Jesus. Doesn't really matter. It wasn't going well. And then someone shouts out, oh no, before that, not my wife, but my wife's cousin, it turned out later, shouts out, oh no, I go, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? And this bloke in front of me goes, you're too polite, mate. And I went, oh, I'm sorry. And I was back to laughter again. And I carried on, trying, nothing works. And then it turned out to my wife, shouting out, don't die, like an order. Don't die. And the reply, the thought that came to me at that moment was, where were you at the crucifixion? Right? Which is quite a good riposte, isn't it? That's not what I said. I was so stone drunk. The thoughts. I changed it to, "Where were you at Calvary?" It's the same idea, but like slightly more complex, and possibly the wrong country. That might be in Canada. It's Calgary, Calvary. Oh, fucking knows. Anyway, bang. And I remember backing off the stage. Right, I'd done my time. Backing off the stage to sort of, it was a weird gig. And coming off and going, fuck me, I'll lay off that stuff. And ending up back in the bar, just drinking, like, chatting to another comic, we were drinking as well. And this girl comes up, goes, oh, a new American woman, she said, you got to meet my friend. You got to meet my friend. I said, I don't want to meet your friend. I just had a really weird gig. Just having a drink with my mate. I don't want to meet your friend. You got to meet my friend. You got to meet my friend. What, you're an agent? I don't want to meet your friend. I just had a really weird gig. I'm just going to get drunk now. That was weird. And third time she comes up, she goes, you got to meet your friend. She heckled you. I said, right, yeah, I've got to meet her. And then we got married, and that's that.
It's lovely.
That's what happens.
Then you've got three girls.
Three daughters, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one dog is male. We watch Match of the Day. He doesn't understand it, but I explain it to him. Oh, happy times. No hair.
So.
No fucking makeup.
I mean, there's so many things we could talk about, Simon. But
no, there's seven.
There are a lot of things. There are a lot of things.
You're like Graham Norton, but less so. You asked me a Graham Norton story. You haven't done that?
Me, I've got great Graham Norton story.
Have you got a Graham Norton
story? Have you got one?
Yeah,
he used to be on after me or before me when I used to be in the Pleasance Attic. So, but he was always doing Mother Teresa. Yeah. Was he Mother Teresa of Calcutta or something? He did a show.
What's your Graham Norton story?
No, I don't have one. Just that's it. That's the story.
Nothing. And you come here?
What's your? I'm prepared with the Graham Norton story. I was once in a restaurant and he was eating at another table in London.
Where are they? It's kind of Kafkaesque.
I had a statue.
Once I... it's less of a story, more of a paragraph. Once I was in a restaurant and Graham Norton was at another table. Full stop.
What is your
Faber and Faber?
What is your Graham?
Is that Faber and Faber?
Have you got a Brian Blessed story? That's what I want to really ask you.
Never met Brian Blessed.
Ah, well, go for Graham Norton.
Wouldn't you just... No, what?
Do you have a Graham Norton story? That you've taken the piss out of me for not having one?
Yeah, go on. I'm not going to tell it.
You can get lots of your stuff at gofasterstripe.com.
I thought
I'd just tell people.
Sanitary towels. Poo poo bum wipes.
You've done a lot. You did a thing with Kevin Eldon, which is.
I'm ashamed of it now.
Mr. Bartlett, Mr. Willis.
It's his thing, really. His thing.
Is it what?
It's his thing.
It was his thing. But you were in it when you've worked
I was
with
in
him
it. I don't deny it. You know.
You've worked with him a lot. But a lot of your.
I like him.
He's all right. He's a likeable fellow. And he's good at doing stuff.
Oh, he's a very good actor.
He is very funny. He's it. Well, you did.
You're not as good as he thinks he is. Few of them are.
Well, you worked with. We did Club Zarathustra, it was so interesting because in the 90s with all that stuff, it kind of nearly got propelled over into TV. I mean, you did a TV pilot of Club Z, you did some Alan Parker stuff on TV. But Club Z was a very avant-garde, which you've carried on subsequently, very avant-garde stuff with Kevin and Stuart and Roger Mann and Richard Thomas.
Is there an end to this sentence?
No. I'm just telling them. I'm telling you. I'm telling them through the medium.
You're telling them
you.
What I've done. Yeah. There's no end. Yeah. That's good. Isn't it? Yeah. I've done loads of stuff.
You've done loads. But it's,
and I'm not famous. It's amazing. Yeah, but rich.
How do you feel? Because I really felt with Club Z, it was so good as a live experience. And you did this TV pilot of it, which was looking amazing as well. And you ran out of money and put insert money in here at the end of it, basically.
That's Stuart's idea.
But it could have been it could have been like this amazing TV thing, and then it wasn't. So do you regret that, or are you happy that it didn't become? It felt like it could have been the sort of avant-garde Python of our generation. If you genuinely died, it'd be very good for the podcast.
Oh, you hit me from behind. How do I feel about the lack of success of Club Zarathustra? I have no feelings.
Do you feel? I mean, no one can hear you now. Do you feel? I'm going to talk now because no one can hear you. Do you feel? I mean, because you've carried on doing that stuff, and are you all that stuff, you know, that rubbish you do, and it's. Do you feel happier? Do you feel happier that it's a sort of more secret thing, live thing? Or would you have liked it to have been more successful in TV terms?
Would you wish you'd been more successful? Do you wish you'd been more successful? Do you wish that? Do you wish you'd been more successful? George Bernard.
Because I think you should be more successful.
But why don't you give me your fucking money? I can build a house or a shack or a theatre.
Anyway.
It was good, though, wasn't
next it? Next question.
It was good, though, wasn't it, Club's Head? It was good.
I don't know. I wasn't there. I was in it. How do you know? I was talking to a woman earlier, who was 14 when she first saw it.
Right.
She loved it so much.
Well, it was amazingly... it was a cult thing within the live circuit. I was an audience member. I was on it in it a couple of times, but I was usually came to watch it. Yeah, I played a frightening Father Christmas, right, who had to give everyone all presents with erect pictures of erect penises stuck on them. And I wore a kind of gas mask. It was Stuart's idea. I had to wear a gas mask. I was on a leash, and I had to give people presents and then kind of sexually molest people in the audience. And then every time I started to try and do that, Stu would crack the... I think he had a whip or a leash, and he would stop me touching the people.
And that happened.
So I had to go up and go, like I was in Shan Andalus or something. And then
Market Devon.
Yeah. It was the Christmas show. Hence the frightening Father Christmas.
You know,
I was.
When you unleash something, you don't really know what it's going to end up like.
No.
And that's how it ended up.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's over. Do you remember Tim Richardson?
I do remember Tim Richardson,
The first ever Clube Zarathustra. Tim Richardson was a founder member, in a way.
Right.
And he did this thing, which was Man of the Sea. And what he did was, he made a tape. And it's a long time ago. C6, anyway. Tape, it's like an audio recording system. it worked. For years, that's what we did. Anyway, he recorded the shipping forecast on radio. Anyone? No, anyway. Just me then. On loop. So it was a tape of that. And he wore around in his costume. I can't remember what the costume was, but he had loads of grapes with cocktail sticks stuck in them with little flags. These grapes. And he just, while the shipping forecast was playing in the audience, he walked round sellotaping these little flags with messages about the sea to people's faces as he walked round. And it was the most just so... Ooh, that changed the atmosphere. I've never seen anything like that. He's the most hilarious man I've ever known.
He's very funny, Tim. Yeah, he's a journalist.
You still in touch?
Still see him. Yeah. He's he writes about sweets now, and gardens.
Yeah, waste.
Who can imagine why that didn't make it on primetime TV? That show, they went for Mrs. Brown's voice instead of that. I can't believe it. So. not directly.
What about arm wrestling? You ain't good at that?
I'm
fucking have you, son.
I'm sure you can. You'll break my arm.
Well, that's your aim.
It's been a long time.
You, get up and referee. Come on.
You've got to come and referee,
Andy. Come on, will you? Yeah. Right. In the end, it doesn't matter who wins. It's all entertainment, isn't it? You know the rules?
Yep. Is it important that I know the rules?
We should be in the middle, should we? You should be doing this.
Shall I do it? I'll go against Andy.
No.
Do you know him? Yeah, it's Andy McH.
It's looking a little bit rigged.
And steady, tense.
I don't know what's going on.
And go. It's exciting.
He isn't trying yet. He's got a longer arm than I have. He's got a longer arm. It's not fair.
Use your hand.
Sorry, Richard. weight advantage. It was tough. That was tough. That's the hardest arm wrestle I've had.
Does it win? Does it always end like this?
It does, yeah. I think it might do. It might do from now on. I should have done it with Milliken.
You'd have lost.
Well, there's too much to talk to you about, Simon. I will... I loved your light... We're going to talk about your light bulb suit. That was an amazing...
I used to have a suit made of light bulb suit.
Yeah. Amazing. If you saw a girl you fancied, you'd light it up.
I did. And also pictures in a gallery at Prague.
Oh, right, yeah. And you did a non-dining restaurant.
Yeah.
That... Were people happy with that?
Like, well, no. Quite a lot of complaints. It was relatively empty. I mean, compared to the other dining restaurants, where people got what they expected. No, it was a parody of a restaurant.
Yeah.
It was a show, and I always, because I always thought, not always. Anyway, I don't really know, but I thought, is it possible to do a show for four people? Two people. I started with two people. He's going to do a show for two people. He's really awkward. If you're standing up talking, blah, 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 and there's two people in the audience, that's really awkward. Right. Four, so basically about 30, that's an audience. But is it possible to do one? I thought, yeah, if you do it in the format of a restaurant. So please sit down. You know, so basically that was the idea. And I went with that, and I started with two, and then went to four, finding it up with eight. And I used to did the disused shop in Carnaby Street five times a day. So basically it was a 45-minute show, then I had 15 minutes set up, and by the time I finished setting up, oh, fuck, they're outside again. And I used to do it six times a day, and then run to Oxford Street. So much adrenaline you got off if you're doing... Anyway, I think it was brilliant, but, you know, you weren't there. But it does work. So 8 out of 10 shows were good. One was awful and one was brilliant. And the one that was awful was because someone would pull focus. If you go a small group of eight, it's basically it's embarrassing to be an audience of eight unless... But if you've got the restaurant format, it's not embarrassing anymore. And so, you know, comic possibilities ensue. Lost some of you. No, anyway, I've had enough now.
Okay. That was our safe word.
No.
Ladies and gentlemen, Simon Munnery.
It's Richard Herring.
You have been listening to Richard Herring at the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Simon Munnery. The music is by Pest. People I must thank are Go Faster Stripe, the Leicester Square Theatre. I would also like to thank the British Comedy Guide and Ian Tunes at iTunes. Thank you for your hard work putting it up. The producer is Ben Walker. He's all right. And this is the first Go Faster Stripe and Sky Potato production. Thank you very much for listening. Goodbye. Thanks for listening. My DVD Happy Now is available from gofasterstripe.com, as all my shows are on DVD there or on download. There's some books. Go and check it out. There's some good ones from other people as well, so check those out. Cheers. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.